Introducing the well-connected 2019 Lincoln MKC, seamlessly connecting the world inside your vehicle to the world outside. With a suite of social tech, including Waze integration and Amazon Alexa through Sync 3 App Link, as well as a 4G LTE Wi-Fi hotspot through Lincoln Connect, helping to make life a little easier. The well-connected 2019 Lincoln MKC. Learn more at lincoln.com/podcast. Don't drive distracted or while using handheld devices. Use voice control.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your babyest gangster or most gangster baby of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. The block is hot, or at least once was. That is old Lil Wayne, 1999. The block is hot from the album of the same name. So last week, Lil Wayne dropped the Carter 5 after 4 or 5 or 7 years. And it is a medium accomplished album. And we are definitely going to talk about that today. But one of the things that I kept returning to when I was listening to and writing about it is I think Wayne feels so disconnected from what's happening in a lot of 2018 hip hop that I felt like a historical look back at his career, big picture, and sort of the peaks and valleys and also the lows would really help contextualize this moment way better than just talking about the new record. So to my left, it's Vanessa Satin, the editor-in-chief of XXL.
What's up?
Hey, V.
Hi.
I'll tell V story in a second. To my right, Joe Coscarelli, pop music reporter in the New York Times, and Lil Wayne 2010 to 2015 stan.
Defender,
yes.
Defender a rare, of the legacy.
A rare breed of someone who actively would like to discuss late period Lil Wayne.
I mean, still the worst decade of Lil Wayne, but...
Yes.
Oh. But the still better than most people's.
We're
decade.
Starting
Good
off
stuff
strong.
To know. Good
we're starting
stuff to
off
know.
Strong. So V, look, let's just make it out. V, how long have you been in XXL? You've been in XXL.
I had my 20th anniversary this past weekend.
Woo!
I know I didn't say anything. Woo! I just had to go. But yeah.
Wow. So just to let the people know, I used to write a lot for XXL. Vanessa was my editor in many of those occasions. Probably the most fanciful and romantic trip I've ever taken in life of any capacity.
Only
was,
man I ever went to Europe with.
Yes, we went to Monte Carlo and Nice together with G Unit.
We did.
In 2005.
It was romantic.
Which cover is that?
It's the G Unit
the 2005 gatefold of everyone.
Like
yeah.
Mobb Deep, MOP.
When they added the new members.
Olivia.
Yeah.
G Unit expansion.
Yes.
Yeah, we ended up in Monte Carlo.
And also Sally Berman. Shout out to Sally Berman.
Sally Berman.
So we stayed in the cheapest hotel in Monte Carlo.
Probably.
Which is still like very expensive.
Probably.
That was a very long time ago. That story exists online.
Double beds, or you guys each had a
suite? No, we had separate
beds.
Oh,
Christ.
But the funny thing is we only took pictures of each other the whole time,
it's
and
true.
That was pre, like, I don't remember if it was cell phones or what.
I feel like it
was
like
so many pictures of John.
It was like disposable
camera.
Or like disposables or something.
We just walked around taking pictures by statues of each other.
Obviously, if you're sort of traveling with rabbits, you're just waiting constantly.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of
We went to the
waiting.
Castle with them.
Went to the castle. We were, like, wandering around the streets. You remember we bumped into Billy Dan's on the street looking at the Jacob the Jeweler
and
thing.
And we had Mace looking at the blue screen
Mace
and not doing anything.
There.
Yeah. And then remember, what was it? Was it Billy Dan's were just sitting and spitting into the fountain?
No, that was Lil Fame.
That was Lil Fame,
That
yeah.
was Lil Fame. But Billy Dan's, you remember we were walking around that one night and he was looking in the window of a Jacob the Jeweler display in some jewelry store. And I was like, what's happening? Like, is he going to come back and buy it?
We
like,
took the helicopter ride.
Yo, we took a helicopter back to mainland.
Podcast.
It really
Scrap
is.
The Lil Wayne talk.
But, our trips alone are a podcast.
But here's the real thing, and this is the real reason I have you here is I want to know why are my Lil Wayne covers of XXL not on the internet?
Oh, good question. We're fixing that now.
Are you?
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
there are some deep Caramonica archive in Lil Wayne Double XL. I did two Wayne covers, one solo and one with Baby. Yeah.
Oh, was that the anniversary one with
I think so.
Mannion and the anniversary in front of their house
Yes, but I wasn't at the photo shoot, I don't think.
It was 1,000 degrees that day. 500.
So a lot of I have a lot of early Lil Wayne perspective. Vanessa, I can't think of a person who spent more time.
I recently got another Cash Money call. I'm like, it took 20 years for me to get my Cash Money notoriety. Yes.
But you're here.
Yeah, I'm here.
We're owning it.
Yeah.
So when I want to talk about the arc of Wayne's career, we have to start with XXL and we have to start with you.
Okay.
So let's talk about where Wayne comes from. Wayne is from New Orleans. Wayne started rapping when he was about 12 or 13 years old, part of the Bee Gees, although his mother basically told him he couldn't rap as part of the Bee Gees anymore.
Baby is gangster.
Yeah,
it's true.
So his mom told him that he couldn't rap, and he shot himself and tried to kill himself, allegedly.
A story that has now been rounded out.
On Carter
the
5.
The last track.
Right, exactly.
Which he's referred to sort of obliquely over the years.
Right, with varying degrees of detail. Sometimes saying he shot himself and recently saying that he was on the Solange record that he was committing suicide.
Calling it a suicide attempt.
So, V, when did you first interact with Wayne? Do you remember? I've got to assume it was...
Yeah, I remember. I remember 90s. The story. I remember everything. Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can nail it to the specific day. Mm-hmm. We were doing a Hot Boys cover.
Sure.
And I was obsessed with...
So this would have been 99?
99. I was 99, 2000. I was obsessed with Cash Money. I thought they were fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans, everything about it, how they moved, the ex-cons that came out and then were matriculated into the crew. I'd never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. And even compared to other crews, Rough Riders, all that, the way Cash Money moved, the way Birdman, you know, and Slim moved everybody around, the crew, everything about it was just fascinating. Yep. I wanted a Cash Money chain so badly. When Drake got a Cash Money chain, I was so angry. Like, I love Drake, but that he got the chain really pissed me off because I felt like, come on, people. I want
run
that chain,
Aubrey,
chain.
Run the chain.
And I wanted the Hot Boys PT Cruiser, the Hot Girl PT Cruiser, sure. Right? And I thought the Hot Boys were fascinating. And, you know, Lil Wayne was getting better and better. And we had done a Hot Boys cover. And back then, you know, you had access to people way more. You had scenery. You spent days with them. So I had to interview them all at different times because they were all in kind of different situations. And I think at that point, Turk wasn't around.
Was he in jail already?
I think he was in the hospital.
Maybe. Yeah.
At the time. And I was chasing because you're always chasing and trying to get them. And I remember interviewing Wayne on his birthday. And it must have been 1999 or 2000. Mm-hmm. To a four-person part, you know, Cash Money story of the Hot Boys. Right. Mm-hmm. And he was the fourth element. And we chased. And that no crew moved like that. So even setting up photo shoots or doing anything was hard. So even the cover shoot at that point fell apart 3 times. And we ended up shooting them in a hallway of a hotel with a background thrown up next to the soda machine. And then I interviewed him in like the hotel lobby or I don't want to say hotel room because that sounds creepy, but it was nothing like that. It was in the hotel lobby, I think.
Was it clear even at that point? Because obviously, so when we're talking about Hot Boys, we're talking about Juvenile, we're talking about BG, we're talking about Wayne. So we're talking about people who have legit hits, legit solo hits. How did Wayne at that point sort of, how did he fit in the crew? Did he sort of have any kind of energy that you could pick up on even at that time?
Wayne definitely had energy. And you even had it off the end of, you know, in the end, the block is, everything going on there with the end of the Juvie video and Ha and stuff. So everybody liked Wayne. And also to my knowledge, and this is all, you know, I'm not part of the crew. This is just my documenting and overtime obsession was that his mom was very involved unlike the other guys as much. In everything with the Hot Boys. So it always felt like he had a different relationship or dynamic with Birdman, with the business, with all of them than the other guys did because it seemed like his mom was kind of prevalent in his career.
So you feel like it's not only in retrospect that we see him as like the true star. Like it was evident even then that he had something.
Oh, definitely. Different. Yeah, definitely. I think the rap increased and got better, you know, with the albums. And I think it really crept up on us. We didn't really think that he was going to be, you know, everyone thought at that time Juby would be the star with Ha and with everything. But then Juby left Cash Money and had a falling out with them. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, Birdman never had the relationship with Juby that he had with BG and Wayne.
Right.
And it was BG who I loved dearly. Well, Lozier is dearly.
Basically his, you know, right. Juby was an adult. Juby had a previous record deal. He right. came to the situation.
And he was older. Exactly right. And then BG at the same time had a different drug issue that Wayne wasn't struggling with.
Shout at me if you have the Juvenile album on Warlock Records.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. I definitely got that. And some 12s as well. So, okay. I remember, so there are a couple of breakthrough moments from that era of Wayne that really stick in my mind. Obviously, the Hot Boys album. You probably also remember from a competitive perspective that Blaze cover. Where
well, that's, I can't believe how old his daughter got from that Blaze cover. That's so, shut. That's like ages me more than anything.
Yeah.
Is so, the Blaze cover. So and now she's
with
on
Regine,
the song.
When yeah. Regine was a baby on the cover of Blaze. I think this was also 99 or maybe 2000. And that was probably
and
the first time.
You never saw anything like that.
That's what I'm saying. Right. I never saw anything like that. And it was also probably the first time that I considered Lil Wayne genuinely as a potential standalone star presence. Even though he was clearly very good in the context.
And he was going on the I Don't Curse in the beginning thing. Like he was going on a kind of cleaner path or whatever. People mm-hmm. thought that was kind of interesting until like all of a sudden the floodgates opened and he was cursing.
Can you contextualize? Well, let's collectively contextualize just how big Cash Money was. It's we sort of assume it as a given in 2018. It's like, oh, that's just like part of rap history. Like that's just a normal thing. But in the in its moment,
you
the
really
Cash Money deal. Yeah. First of all, the Cash Money deal was
$32 million, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when they signed, like basically they signed, it was almost like an answer deal to what P had with Priority.
Exactly right.
So it was bigger. The upfront money was more, allegedly. I mean,
but didn't they own
their masters?
Right, so that
was a Wendy Day thing.
Exactly.
Like Wendy Day helped negotiate whatever deal they had where they got to keep their, or at least own back their masters at some point. I don't know if they always owned them. But at that time, for a Southern crew to have that big of a distribution deal with a major label that was based in New York, it's not that Southern rappers had not signed before. Obviously, Jive had a real history signing Southern rap. Obviously, LaFace. But for basically a Southern gangster rap crew to have that big of a deal. With
and
a
to be
label,
from New Orleans.
To be from New Orleans.
From New Orleans. That was a different culture to people back then. That was a different place. You know, it was fascinating that these guys were from there. That was so different from the East and the West Coast completely.
Yep.
You know, or even Chicago scene or anything. So now you had these guys where the weather was always hot and their Jerbo jeans and their
white tees.
Soldiers and their, you know, everything a certain way with a mouthful of gold on another level. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even then I think more than the Atlanta rappers, I'd have to go back and compare. But
no, I think
culturally,
you're right.
I think to so many different people, it was different and it was fascinating.
As a child growing up in the Southeast, you know, Juvenile was Biggie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like to us, like that New York rap was what it was, but it, you know, as the South was sort of coming up, like Juvenile and Wayne and the Hot Boys were like as big as it got.
That's why I think it was Wayne getting becoming the star was weird to people because it was that feeling with Juvie, you know?
And there was a connection, you know, I remember Cars. I remember, you know, at football games. Like it was always Juvenile, was always Cash Money.
Right. And so what happened in 98 and 99, 2000, obviously Cash Money is a movement, whether it's Ha
well, it was
or
an
bling
army.
Bling. Yeah. Better yet, a Navy.
Yeah, better yet, a Navy.
Better yet, a Navy.
Might be a Space Force.
Well, eventually, yeah. So what happened is New York loses its grip. New York and L.A. lose their collective grip on hip-hop's center. And I really think with Cash Money's pop success, that's probably the first time, maybe you can put some Outkast in there, but it's really the first time that Southern rap that's like unvarnished in that particular way ends up occupying the center space of hip hop's pop popularity.
Yeah.
And that remains shocking as someone from Brooklyn, as someone who was writing for rap magazines at that time, it was still shocking. And I remember even feeling at the time that magazines we're like still sort of playing catch up a little bit because it's not, you know, you didn't hear it here. You didn't hear it on the radio. There's like some legendary, like a legend story about Funk Flex breaking Ha at the tunnel.
Yeah.
Which I was not there, but like maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe maybe someone paid him to do it. Maybe no one paid him to do it. You know, I don't know. I don't know. If anybody knows, please call me or email us.
I'm just seeing a gif in my head of the Wayne cameo in the Ha video. And he just pops just his walking screen. Across he just pops his little head into, one the, of the, great into gifts. The frame.
One of the great gifts. V, when you were covering that stuff, how different was it from covering the other stuff at the time? How different?
I'm not following.
How different was
before blow up and after blow up?
No. How different was covering Cash Money as opposed to covering whoever, New York rappers or LA rappers?
Oh, it was hard to cover Cash Money. It was hard to cover Cash Money because there was a lot of politics and closed doors and secrets and stories and issues that they were trying to keep secret.
Yes,
which continue to this day.
Which continue to this
day.
There's
a lot of unsolved questions.
Exactly. And you wanted to be able to tell the stories and speak on the stories. But at the same time, you know, you're trying to have a relationship because you're a rap outlet. You know, and also the crew was difficult in general to, you know, chase down the amount of people, the way they moved, everything about it. But Universal did a great job handling them. I mean, through and through from day one, Wendy Washington, you know, I think it was Althea Spellman. Vicky Charles, Kia Selby, they were.
And Dino, who signed them.
And Dino, right? Dino Valle, right? They were all, knew how to move them, knew how to work them, but it was hard. You know, I mean, but it was, everything was.
It's still hard.
I think of the impact that they've had on the culture versus how much we know about them and how they operated. And it really seems like, you know, it's like this iceberg, right, where the little tip is outside of the water. And then there's all, as you say, all these secrets, all these backroom dealings. And I feel like it's
all these complicated relationships. Like, I think that was a big factor in it, was the complicated relationships with the artists, with Berman, with Ronald, with Slim. I think that was a big part of it. You know, I mean, they had issues as having these father-like figures to them and at the same time having business relationships and at the same time dealing with addictions. Yep. So I think there was just, and then at the same time not wanting everyone to know everything because these guys are becoming bigger and bigger stars. I think there were a lot of complications with a four-man rap group.
And see, but it seems like one of the great sort of untold stories in hip hop in a lot of ways that, you know, there are these questions that we'll never have answers to.
I used to
you
think
mean
it
the
is.
Early Cash Money stuff.
I mean, up until Wayne's fight with Birdman through this.
Oh, sure.
What would be your biggest questions? I'm curious.
Oh, I don't know if I can even speak on what my biggest questions are.
Yeah, we'll save it for
all I have to say
off
is
mic.
Look at the earliest Cash Money releases.
Okay, yeah.
That's, you know, I'll just throw that out there.
Where did the money go?
Which we always tried to cover.
Yeah. I want to follow the money.
Into the teeth.
I want the Trump, I want the 13,000 Trump tax expose for Cash Money records.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you can't acknowledge the Cash Money movement, and we got this far without individually focusing on Birdman. You know, and the character that he is. And there's nobody like him.
And he's let's talk about the relationship between him and Wayne. Mm-hmm. Because I was very struck when I interviewed them, the sheer affection between the two of them. And this is, of course, in 01 or 02 or
the kissing picture.
Yeah, I mean, of course. But just like Birdman very clearly felt Wayne was his child.
There was a total father-like son. No, there was a total relationship.
It was not
like
an act.
That.
No,
but a lot
not
of
at all.
You don't have the. No, not at all. Not at all. Says me. You know, I don't think so at all. I think that you then had a layer of money. And your father and son relationships normally don't have that, right? So you've got this fatherly figure, and then you've got a business side of it. And Wayne got huge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Wayne got huge. Nobody ever thought Wayne was going to get as big as he did. You know, he started to get bigger. I remember when Elliot was our editor and he was deciding whether to do the solo cover on him or not. You know, was he ready for his first solo cover? And then it was like, yeah. You know, I think we split him with Beanie for the first cover.
Sure.
Beanie Siegel. But, you know, and then it was an obvious after that. I was like, you want to go with Gold? Get a Gold and succeed, do a little Wayne cover. And to this day, no disrespect to John, they weren't the most hard-hitting interviews, like, overwhelming like you would get during the Ja Rule Cash 50 Cent days.
No.
Those interviews, you'd be kind of glued to your Q&A in a different way. But it was the story of Lil Wayne, of catching up with him, of everything was going to be at the moment that made the story, that you made the story interesting. Not so much the interview.
No, and also the thing with Wayne as an interview, and certainly with Baby, was like you could ask 50 a controversial question and 50 would lean into the question.
Yeah.
You would ask Wayne or Baby a controversial question and they would look like they wanted to throw you off the roof.
That, and they also did a good job of just dodging it. They were never, you didn't trip them up with interview questions, never. And it wasn't because you, I mean, you got over being scared of them. Like, of course, there was these kind of, you thought, gangsters from New Orleans that people tried to, they tried to freak you out by, but you didn't necessarily really took it like that. You took it like you just, they were hard eggs to crack. You know, like whatever it was they were all protecting or not speaking on or wanted to keep secret, they all knew that. They didn't have to like compare notes on it before.
They knew what they
knew what they were
about.
And weren't going to talk about. Right. And you was hard for you to kind of, it wasn't like you were going to go trip them up into anything, you know?
Let's jump forward to 04. 04 is the year of Go Deep. Let's listen to Go Deep.
It's your boy, you heard, back again. DJ Manny. Rick, fresh, fresh, rip, fresh. Yeah, fresh, fresh, rip, rip, fresh. DJ, go DJ, that's my DJ, go DJ, that's my DJ, go DJ, yeah, with Weezy Wee, step up to the mic, dude, do what you
ladies
do.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you have here is brought to you, courtesy of the young man, Young Carter, and the great man, Manny Fresh. So what I want y'all out there to do for me is, say this, say go DJ,
cause that's my DJ,
say go DJ,
cause that's my DJ.
Under the sun, I come from under the Tommy, bustin' a Tommy. You come from under your garment, your chest and your arm hit. Pow, one to the head. Now you know he did. Now you know I play like a pro in the game. Nah, better yet, a veteran, a Hall of Fame. I got that medicine, I'm better than all the names. A is Cash Money Records, main a lawless game. Put some water on a track, fresh for all this flame. Wear a helmet when you bang it, man, and guard your brain. Cause the flow is spasmodic, what they call insane. They ain't even a homeboy, aim, I get dope, boy. And you already know that pimpin' 18, I'm living young and show that Bentley. Stun on my paw, so you know that's in me. Got in my mentor, so don't go there with me. Up DJ,
cause that's my DJ.
Say go DJ,
cause that's my DJ.
This is the car.
Hey, this is Andrew Ross Sorkin from the New York Times. We're getting ready for the Big Deal Book Conference in New York City. This year it takes place on November 1st, and we're going to be talking about some of the biggest issues at the intersection of business and policy. We've assembled some of the brightest minds for one day all on the same stage. The CEOs of Google, Goldman Sachs, 21st Century Fox, Snapchat, General Motors, Merck, and so many more. I'm going to be asking some pretty tough questions about provocative issues and the hottest topics of the day. If you want to get in on it, you can check it out, nytdealbookconference.com. Hope to see you there.
This is Sam Sifton, food editor of the New York Times. Whether you're just starting out in the kitchen or looking to up your game, NYT Cooking is here with more than 19,000 times-tested recipes and all the help you need to cook them well. Subscribe today at nytcooking.com/podcast.
So in the early part of the 2000s, Wayne is becoming a solo fixture, but he doesn't have a genuine breakthrough. Go DJ is the first.
This is actually, it, yeah.
Yeah, it's not really a Wayne record I like particularly much, but it's the one that does the thing of actually really catapulting him into the pop consciousness. And so at this moment, this is off the first Carter. We're at Carter 5 right now. This is off the first Carter, and this is Wayne. In a way, Wayne would always talk about how much he admired Jay-Z, and this is Wayne's, I don't want to say it's his blueprint necessarily.
It is.
But
it's
it's in that sphere. It's along those lines. It's him kind of like conceiving himself.
You can't be a Wayne fan
artist
and not be very familiar with this project.
Right. Sure. I think it aged better also than any of his albums. Mm-hmm. I think it's the album that you listen to today and, you know, it's not the abstract space alien Wayne, but you see all the directions that he could go. And and the songwriting is very strong for such a young man. And you can see that he'd been doing it already at this point for so long. And you listen back to some of these songs like Miss My Dogs, you know, something like that. And you really feel the soul and you see, you know, you see somebody budding into an icon, I think.
Well, you had the fact that you knew things were wrong with the crew. right? But you didn't get them to speak on it. Anybody who tried, you didn't get what you wanted. But they did speak on it in the records with I miss my dogs and stuff. So you got to that point where you were like, okay, so confirmation, that's right. There weren't message boards and people talking about everything and finding and piecing together everything on Instagram. It was just kind of like very loose of how you could put together what you thought was going on being a journalist. And then on top of that, what the music brought to it. On top of it, I think that's the album where lyrically and rap-wise, he just started to show that he was on a different level. Yeah. As corny as that different level
that's real.
Line sounds. That to me, like, and I might be remembering the song wrong, but I do remember the story wrong, but I do remember I've never been big into reviews because it's, you know, your personal opinion. But I remember we gave a review to the album.
Hey!
It's your personal opinion.
Criticism,
you know?
Is dead.
Yeah. But I was back then, and I remember being so disappointed in the review that we gave it, thinking like, no, this is better than that. You know, or making a stink over that one. I could remember in the story wrong, but making a stink over that one, because I think people even at first slept on that album. You know, and didn't acknowledge it. And then it's, you know, we're like, oh, now he's really going into that area. Now he's kind of taken off. So that's the biggest marker for me and probably the album piece that I mostly go back to.
I was recently rewatching all of his Rap City performances. You know, they're not really organized on the internet, but you can sort of find from this period, you know, he was there, he was on a lot. And you see both Birdman bigging him up, you know, there's all the sort of he's really gassing him like a boxer in his corner with his coach, you know, and you can see him just getting to, as you say, a new level lyrically. And then some of those freestyles, you know, ended up being verses on
and
this
New
album.
Orleans wasn't known for lyrical rappers. Wasn't the thing. This was the bling bling. This was entertaining. This was a different life. This was living a certain way. This was coming from a different place. This was different slang. But it wasn't known, like the Hot Boys and Cash Money were known to be, or No Limit were known to be so lyrical.
Right.
And now you had that started.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, like, to me, I always thought BG was, like, quietly very lyrical. Like, Chopper City in the Ghetto to me is
a great album. Yeah.
It's, like, one of the best records, like, top 50 hip hop of all time records. And I always thought BG, like, I thought BG was the lyricist.
Yeah. And he was known as the lyricist you're right. He was known as the lyricist in the crew, but I still think not at the level of what people were acknowledging. New York was known for.
Absolutely.
But definitely he was the lyricist in the crew, but it was harder because he was less known, being that at the height of things, he was always in and out of jail.
Yeah, and so, also he was the bling bling. Like, at a certain point, it's just
and
like
that song. And he got tied into bling bling, which necessarily wasn't that character exactly, you know?
How much do you think the first Carter gave Wayne in terms of reputation for lyricists at the time? Because that's something that he would continue to carry as a chip on his shoulder for many more years.
I think
at least
it opened the door
albums.
To having the conversation about it. I don't think he was recognized like that before that project.
To me,
I think that project created the conversation,
like,
for him.
How heated were the debates at that moment? You know,
I think
between
we're still
whether or not Wayne was a lyricist.
I think we're probably still one or two, maybe like a year away from the debates, because I'm looking at the discography of the mixtape releases. And so The Drought and The Drought 2 are 03 and 04. DJ is Carter is 04. So I feel like The Drought 2 and then eventually getting into the Dedication tapes, that's when the conversation starts. I feel like the Dedication tapes in 05 and 06, that's when everybody is like, oh,
I think they started talking
about
it on the Carter, though.
Yeah. Do you remember people who would go out on that limb and say that, you know, Lil Wayne was...
I don't think it would make an argument of how great he was. I just think it was clear that he was getting better, right? So you like, projects would come out and that would be the height of somebody's success, was their only project. With him, we were literally watching him grow. You know, we were watching this kid rapper almost, you know, become a, you know, older, more serious rapper. Now he could curse. Now he could do this. You know, he was becoming a man in front of our eyes, as corny as that could sound, you know, and I think that that's, for me, that's when it was like, okay, you got to pay attention. It's not the juvenile. They also had the crumbling of everything around them and stuff. So he's kind of the one sticking around in the first version of things, you know, in the early, early days. So you kind of gave up on that juvenile thing, and you gave up on, you weren't really banking on Turk and Juvie, sorry, and BG. So there, Wayne's starting is the bud.
Certainly by 06, I mean, is anyone left besides Wayne?
I don't remember.
It's all so fuzzy, and obviously people came and went and da da da. But like, I mean, my memory is like, by the time, so Like Father, Like Son, that's the Wayne and Baby album. That's October 2006.
I love that album.
Good record, right?
Really strong.
Yeah.
There's a few I'd skip over, but I love that album.
I feel like by that point, I don't know if anyone was left.
No.
And that's part of them sort of solidifying their bond and saying we're the last
one. Turk was always the weird, a little bit one in the group. BG was suing. I don't remember what year. I'd have to look it up, but he had legal problems with them. And Juvie had left the crew.
Right.
So, and you weren't really, they had tried or were working on creating new stars, but it was Wayne that became the pillar of the whole thing. Now, you could go into after that, Nicki and Drake becoming Cash Money artists and blah, blah, blah. But that was the pillar of what was a huge record label. Because at that point, which was different than now, people loved rap crews, right? There were rap crews. There were, I wasn't the only one who wanted the chain, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that now you've got kind of, you know, that there's a falling apart. The stuff is happening and he's kind of sticking there and it's Wayne and Birdman and their Cash Money.
Well, there's one name we haven't mentioned yet that also sort of falls away at this point.
Manny Fresh.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you, because the Carter is sort of the last time that it was the Wayne and Manny show.
Right.
Right. So what do you think?
And to acknowledge that that crew was all Manny Fresh.
Right.
I mean, it was weird when they started to branch out and you would hear a Cash Money artist on a non-Manny Fresh beat.
Right.
And nothing worked like that the same way back then. You know, it was almost like that was the only one that anybody that could touch them.
Yeah,
you
do
know?
You guys remember when you started hearing? Beats. Yeah, when you started hearing Wayne on other people's beats, maybe that gave him, you know, more space, different pockets. Like, what was that transition like in real time?
I mean, well, for me, it was more the mixtape Wayne than album Wayne because I feel
the best, the better music then became
Like hearing Dedication 2, especially growing up on New York radio, you got very acclimated to like Fab rapping on every song or just like every, you know, just like constant remixes, and that's fine. Like it just, it's part of the culture.
Well,
but
I mean, you hit 2002, it's Cash Money, it's Ja Rule, G-Unit. And I mean, those that at the
those
kind
G-Unit
of
tapes,
same thing.
The Dipset tapes, Wayne's approach to making mixtapes was, I always thought, more musical, more clever, and more artist defining than any of the other guys who made tapes. Not that they weren't good, but like Fab would always do Fab and 50 would do 50 and Dipset would do Dipset. Wayne, whatever Wayne was doing and whatever drugs he was taking, may or may allegedly taking, he was basically reinventing songs wholesale. Should we listen to something off one of the Dedication tapes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's really a turning point.
Yeah, let's listen to... Should we listen to Sports Center?
Sports Center. Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, let's listen to Sports Center off of Dedication 2.
It's Gates the Grills, you bastard.
Cover my tracks like butter, so where the bread be? I see beef is dead meat. Who the hell president? Hear me. No one scare me. And you ain't got to double dare me. Hear me. Cover my tracks like butter, so where the bread be? I see beef is dead meat. Who that the president? Hear me. No one scare me. And you ain't got to double dare me. Hear me. Loud and clearly, rats aren't near me. Wiretaps are gonna get blood in the earpiece. I'm from New Orleans, nowhere near peace. Pure beast, fear free, near grief. Catch up if I'm in gear 3. Zoom, don't see ya. Peace, drop one finger. Yeah, fuck a man, whoever made him. I will hurt whoever love him, cause I hate him. Looking for a lady, high and sedated. Got it to the pad, I don't know how I even made it. She gave me relations.
So at this point, Wayne is both prolific and kind of a madman. And also genuinely the best rapper working.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, like, mattered at that point.
Yeah.
Those are debates that, like, rap magazines had. Those are debates that rap fans had. Like, I don't think anybody in 2018 who's not a Kendrick stan is really, like, agonizing too much over, like, the best rapper alive.
Right.
But, like, in that moment.
Hey, be nice to J. Cole stans and Logic stans.
Wow.
The Rat Pack is going to be in your email.
Critics pick. Young Sinatra 4.
We'll get there. We'll get there. You have some explaining to do.
But the idea that a rapper from New Orleans could genuinely be the best rapper alive was a novel idea, but also completely self-evident when you would listen to these tapes.
And then said it.
Yeah.
Right. He was a provocateur. That was the other thing. Yeah. He was not only getting on songs you wouldn't expect him to, saying things you wouldn't expect him to, but he was the first person to say... Not the first rapper to ever say it, but in terms of the Wayne conversation, he said it before the magazines.
Yeah.
Right, and he embraced it. And then lyrically at that point, he was so good.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard to argue.
If you could distill down, in your opinion, why Wayne was a great rapper in this moment, like how would you describe it? Like what is it that he was doing on these songs?
I mean, it was just great wordplay, you know, and it, you know, like if you compare it to an Eminem situation, I always figure out Eminem knows how to ride the beat. He knows how to find any beat, know what to do with it and how to make the words fit the beat. Mm-hmm. I think with Wayne, it didn't matter about the beat. Yeah. You know, I think that no matter what, he knew what to do with words and does. But then for us, knew what to do with words. And it was just quotables. I mean, you can make arguments like Lloyd Banks had quotables, mm-hmm. but I think, and that was a big part of it. But I think that it was this lifestyle that you didn't know this Wayne as a character. It seemed you're a rap baby, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Your whole life is that at this point. And, you know, we've seen you grown with you. We've been with you all this time. And now we've watched you just get better and better to the point where the wordplay, I think, got anybody. It didn't matter if you're from New York. It didn't matter if you're from, you know, the West Coast, the East Coast, whatever it is. You couldn't kind of disagree with what he had going on.
And it's interesting. He wasn't making a lot of the compromises. Like, you can say other great technical rappers were also the best rapper alive and also very popular. Jay-Z in the early 2000s, for one. But Jay-Z was making a lot of compromises. Jay-Z was making very pop records. Jay-Z was dumbing down and doubling his dollars. Wayne was getting more popular and weirder
at the same time.
At the same time. Why? The internet. We have to talk about the internet.
The internet and, and then the skateboarding, the whole side, all the different sides of that he embraced that I think lifestyle-wise was something different, you know, for people. I think that was a big part of it, you know, just that he was open. And before we get to the rock stuff, you know, that he was just open to all these different side of things that kids that were fans wanted to be into and wanted him to be into, like a kid's skateboard because of Lil Wayne. Like, is that wrong? You know, but hip hop skateboards because Lil Wayne brought it in, or is that,
Pharrell,
you know, Pharrell.
But Fiasco.
I don't know. But were they following them as much as they were following Wayne?
No, I think Wayne brought it to a new audience.
I
think Wayne got into skating a little bit later. Right?
He got into it later,
Send
but definitely
your early truck fit gear and all that.
I mean, that became synonymous with him.
Right.
Right. And his and he being interested in that, and then him being a sports fan and all different things that he had these kind of interests outside of hip hop. I thought were and became more of a person in front of us. So here you're a young father. You know, we know you're young, whatever we know. I don't know if he was he married to her or not early on? Like, wasn't he
supposed to be married?
I don't know if that was true or not.
He proposed a few times, but
and
they didn't end
right,
up getting
whatever.
Married.
I never remember. I think I skipped over that. But he was, you know, everything about him was kind of this interesting character to people, to the media and to listeners.
I think the other innovation of this moment, as you say, you know, the internet was just the pace, right? Like, because simultaneously, Vanessa, you mentioned his appearance on Soldier, the Destiny's Child song. So he's becoming a pop crossover, and then he's becoming an underground folk hero at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the amount of songs he was putting out, he was rapping
with
on
that, and
every
I
beat.
I don't remember exactly. I'd have to look at a timeline, but he is having bumpy problems with Birdman and Cash Money along the way. And the stuff, and I don't remember exactly when, but at some point he got $1 million in like a frozen ice sculpture, you know, or something. Like the idea was...
up on the frozen ice sculpture.
I missed that one too.
I have to Google it.
That's a footnote in
what's
history.
It called? But it was always that there were rumbles and they always along this way and they tried to figure out how to kind of squash the beef, right? And I think even at that Soldier point, there were rumors that he might go over to be with Jay or so and so. So at that point, you're like, okay, now Wayne is still with Cash Money, but where could he go? What could he do? Everybody wants to work with him. Anything is kind of the sky's the limit, maybe. Or is he going to be held by Birdman and stay there? Or are they getting along or are they not? That's been along the journey the whole way, not just till now. And it's almost a tired story.
And you would also see it with the producers because there were always producers looking for their money from Birdman.
Still.
And to this day, but that was, you know, those were sort of the warning signs. You know what I mean? That there was something going on.
The warning signs were things early on, probably with the earlier Cash, you know, Hot Boys and artists and stuff. Yeah.
Joe, you brought up an interesting, I don't want to say tension, but kind of a weird balance that Wayne had, which is if you look in the 06 to 07 period, he is simultaneously, like, literally the poppiest rapper out, especially going into 08 and Carter 3. And he is also the pure motivation of the id of the hip-hop internet.
Right.
So let's remember what was happening in the mid-2000s online. This is the beginning of the rap blog era. Mm-hmm. You guys at XXL, you guys were publishing a lot of blogs. There, you know, any number of blog spots.
Everybody was remaking each other's songs.
Shout to Nas and Cocaine Blunts and everything. So that's all happening. And in my mind, the motivators for those kids, who I assume were basically probably 17 to 22 years old, probably white, probably college educated, but who ran rap blogs.
Was or always read rap blogs.
Right, or read, right. But they were, in my mind, the two motivators were always Cameron and Lil Wayne.
Yes. And a little bit of Clips.
Right. And sort of in an after fact way. Wayne was sort of a perfect artist for that kind of rap fan. Intense wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
Like quasi-scholarly, but also kind of like he's like a genuine gangster rapper from New Orleans. And so there's this kind of like the remove that the internet allows you to bridge is perfect for a guy like Wayne.
Also in form, because he triggered people's instincts for collection, right? He was oh, a God, collector's yeah. rapper. You know, the amount of snippets and leaks and unfinished versions and alternate versions
that I would
be downloading off of Nah Right or whatever. You know, it sort of is the precursor to like the snippet era now, where like fans obsess over a Thug or a Keef right. snippet for Uzi. Years or Uzi.
I mean, it's funny because at some Your point back in that time, you'd get tons of music, and now you know you put one song out and it's a news item. But right. back then, we would get so much music from every
official,
you know,
unofficial
mm-hmm. runs, you know, the whole. For any hip hop fan to not understand what it was to go to get the bootlegs and mixtapes mm-hmm. and try to find bootlegs and mixtapes in Burkina and blah 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 and all of that.
Hey, shout out to Burkina,
right? And
oh
not
my
understand
God.
What that was like and all of that. You missed out. You missed out. You missed out on all that stuff.
And the other person, sort of, you know, running parallel to Wayne at the mixtape moment was Gucci, right? And I loved how in Gucci's book, you know, he and Wayne are always sort of giving each other credit. You know, it's like, did Gucci get the idea from Wayne to flood the streets, or did Wayne get the idea from Gucci? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think they've always been, you know, very gracious with each other. And they were, you know,
You're
working
right.
on these parallels.
Definitely, right. But Wayne had mainstream success
yes.
already,
yes.
just with Hot Boys Cash Money, with national tours, with Rough Rider Cash Money tour. Oof. Gucci was still not underground, but still an Atlanta artist.
Wayne was coming top down,
yeah.
and Gucci was still coming.
Or not even top down, but literally living two Both. Parallel lives.
Yeah.
So let's jump up to Carter 3, 2008. Let's listen to, I don't want to do Lollipop, but let's listen to a Millie.
I was going to say Lollipop Remix.
Wow. Okay, let's listen to Lollipop Remix.
Shout and say she wanna lick the rapper. And she gonna lick the rapper. And I just wanna act like a porno flicking actor. I don't need a beaker, now she caught up in that rapture. I got so much chips, I swear they call me Hewlett Packard. I got so much chips, you can have a bag if you're a snacker. Greedy mother butch cake, now tell me how that butch tastes. I do it for blood sake. Super bank and voodoo, how the roof do dissipate. Your girl wants to participate. She so sophisticated, cause her brain is off the chain. And then my diamonds are in the choir because they sang. From off my chain, and my Nina just joined the game because all she do is bang. Like Ricky Martin, Wayne, and Kanye, pick your poison. If that woman wanna cut, then tell her I am Mr. Ointment. Tell her make an appointment with Mr. I can't make an appointment. Take my lollipop and enjoy it. Remake one of the
bottles in the club. So again, here's the thing with Wayne. He is literally the biggest star in at this point, not just in hip hop, potentially in all of pop music in 2008. But he is still releasing mixtapes. He is still cultivating what almost feels like an alternate personality online. And the volume of music he's putting out is like is torrential. At this moment, he's starting to set a template for what's going to happen now, 10 years later. Joe, I know you're upset that I wrote positively about the new Logic album, but when you see what Logic has done, toggling between mixtapes, quote unquote, and albums and different characters and different like conceptual narrative through lines, that's a Wayne thing. Now, you could say Logic is not inheriting things from many other things from Wayne.
A business plan, at least.
Yes, but at minimum, from a structural perspective, that's Wayne.
And Carter 3 was supposed to be the culmination, right? It was supposed to be this, and to some extent it was. You know, you can argue about how successful it was as an album, but it was, you know, he had put out so much free music that this was supposed to be the explosion, you know, the merging of the two, the mainstream Wayne and the underground Wayne, and you get Lollipop, and it's, you know, a huge pop hit. But you also I think it's under-remarked upon how Carter 3 was changed because of internet leaks. There were so many songs that were supposed to be part of his, you know, this magnum opus that ended up just being relegated to bootleg status, basically.
Right. Back when leaks were still a problem. But in a weird way, like, it made sense for Wayne because he was leaking 50 of his own songs at the same year or the same 6 month period that he
just thought
he was
rapping nonstop.
Yeah.
You know, and then that always comes to Tupac comparisons, right? He wasn't always compared to Tupac, but everybody gets their moment of it. That's always my joke kind of in hip hop is everyone has their Tupac moment. And I think that with Pac, with Wayne, the example was you just thought they were rapping constantly. You know, the collection of trying to get all of Tupac's recordings after he passed, of everybody who had him. You always heard about that. You heard about that kind of stuff with Soulja Slim. With Wayne, you just got the idea that he was rapping nonstop. He always had stuff to say. Always, was in the, you know, you don't know how much he was in the studio because back then you weren't dealing with video of everything. Right. So it wasn't Instagram of me in the studio and me here and me there. So you didn't really know how things were being done. You know, you're also dealing with, we're leaving out, which sounds weird, but you have Katrina happens and shifts the whole world from Louisiana over to Houston, over to Miami.
Right, Wayne
you know,
moves
and
to
now
Miami
they're in
time.
Miami and everything changes because they're there and there's a different setup. You know, so Cash Money, Wayne and Cash Money figured out how to shift a few different times to get to this new area. And I think with the Carter 3 album, I don't think anybody ever thought it was going to be as good as it was. You know, I don't think anybody really thought Wayne was going to come out with some classic album. Mm-hmm. I think it was we all knew he was getting better and better, but I still think it took everybody by surprise of how good it was.
The other thing I remember from that period is you mentioned the pace that he was at. It was this idea that Wayne didn't care about albums and all he wanted to do was rap all the time. And he left it to Tez, he left it to Mac, he left it to Baby to put the project.
Right, because you didn't get the feeling he was obsessed with the internet. You know, like
the internet was obsessed.
But it didn't go mutually. He wasn't playing into it. He wasn't playing into what the, you know, early on they did web stuff. They had when he was locked up, they had the website for people to write letters to him and so and so.
But he was definitely like, I mean, my memory of being in the studio when Wayne was in the studio was he would just have ESPN on. And he would basically just get fed beats and just rap on. Like, and it was just
at like weird times.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
It could be 2 in the afternoon, could be 5 in the morning. Like, it just, but he just go and go and go. And I think you're right, Joe, that after the sort of after the fact collating of those things
was left to somebody else.
I don't think it was a Wayne thing.
And you get a bit of that in the Carter, the documentary that came out around this time. The worst part of the Carter, which I think is a great film, even though obviously Wayne ended up hating it and there's a lot
Baller
of
Baller Blocking was really good too.
Contentious moments in it.
True story.
Where I met him on the set of the Baller Blocking.
Yeah, I definitely
video.
Have the
that
VHS.
It.
I got a VHS of Baller Blocking.
Yeah.
Let's have a viewing party.
Unfortunately, the filming of that comes right after the sort of mixtape peak. You know, the triumphant scene in that movie is Tez coming on the bus to tell him that it sold a million first week and Wayne's watching ESPN and not really paying attention.
Because I don't know how much.
A million first week. Just soak that in.
Yeah.
The last
Pre-Spotify,
time.
This is.
The
yeah.
last time I walked
but
into
you go
a
back
store
to 2003
on a release
with
day to
50.
Buy a CD.
Yeah.
The last time, literally.
What was it? 900,000 or what was it? How much for 50 in 4 days in the first 4 days of Get Rich? It was some astronomical. Yeah. Like that was the days of 1 week a million records.
Sure. Right.
But it was the fading days.
Yeah.
It was the fading days. Yeah.
Is
definitely.
Wayne the last? Maybe Adele has done it subsequent to that? Who? I'm trying to think who
I
else.
I think Adele and Taylor have both done it since.
The 1 million.
A million in a week, but obviously, you know, everything was different.
So my contention is Wayne's never been good since this moment.
Well, the thing
since which moment?
Since Carter 3.
Since Carter 3.
So the guest versus
Carter 4 was a disappointment.
The guest versus post Carter 3 continue, I think, to be good. And then the major life event that happens is he goes to jail.
Yeah.
I think the conventional wisdom at this moment is, you know, Wayne is in New York for a concert. Mm-hmm. His bus gets stopped. There's a gun.
There's a gun on the bus.
He eventually pleads out to jail time. And
In New York. Like, I think that surprised people. Yes. Not that he went to jail. That Little Wayne went to jail. Yeah. And he went to jail in New York.
He went to Rikers.
Yeah. It was just interesting. You know, as a New Orleans, now you've got him locked up there. I think the media, what was it, Rolling Stone did before and after him going in, him going out. You know, that was well done and documented. He communicated with his fans like crazy while he was in jail. You know, it was, and we thought he was going to come out with like an abundance of material.
Oh, well, and he says, you know, in his diaries from that time, which were released as a book, you know, that he wasn't really writing music, that his, you know, his soul had sort of been sucked out. And then when he gets out, he's on probation for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the conventional wisdom is that then, you know, he's sober. Who knows, you know,
what
his pee tests were like.
And also, we don't advocate drug use as a path towards artistic creativity.
Of course. But that, I think, became the narrative, right? That when Wayne stopped doing drugs.
He got
But you can have the same conversation about Eminem, right?
Sure.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, and that's not, again, we don't advocate, you know, we're not advocating drug use.
No,
but
it's
we
hard.
Do
you
think
were saying, were you at your best when you were messed up? And then that's the only time that you can be what everybody wants, and is that fair?
It's a valid
conversation.
There was a creative flood that happened to coincide with a period of time where Wayne seemed to be very preoccupied with sipping lean.
And Gucci as well.
On top of that, you do have the success of Young Money. There was a time in Dead Rock and time period where there was a movement there. There was a, you know, so it didn't kill him.
Right.
You know,
he had laid the foundation for his legacy to be continued through younger people. But Wayne as a rapper came out of jail very different than he went in.
Yeah, definitely.
Desiccated. And I'm just even now looking at the discography albums. I mean, you want three words on Rebirth?
Yeah.
Go in.
Not really into the rock era.
Yeah.
Forward.
Rebirth, it's like there's an interesting thing that I think happened. And Wayne was maybe like late on this party, but like I feel like rappers in the 90s or early 2000s would be like, I'm successful. I'm going to be taken seriously and do other genres. And then it never works. And this did not work.
Though you can say that it's been influential. I mean, I think the SoundCloud obsession with
good take.
Being rock stars
mm-hmm.
with
Well, that's it. I think the lifestyle versus the music.
I don't think it's coincidental that these kids were, you know, becoming cognizant humans
at the time.
Wayne was
coincidental. Little Wayne
and give them the Judgment Night soundtrack.
I mean, Lil Wayne and Birdman and the tattoos on the face.
Of course.
Yeah.
All of that.
Face tattoos, Gucci and Wayne, like purely. So look, Rebirth, I Am Not a Human Being, into Carter 4, I Am Not a Human Being 2. Like these are not particularly memorable Wayne
so
records.
So sometimes when artists get really big, I think they can go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah.
And I think there was some things of, you know, and you might have a diehard Lil Wayne fan argue differently, but I don't think The Rock connected the way he was hoping to, people were hoping. I'm going to be, you know, pessimistic and say I never really thought it was going to go that way in general. But I don't think it hurt him. I just think it stalled him. Maybe not.
It's hard to say if it hurt
him. I don't know if it hurt him.
He had sort of built up so much goodwill that people were willing to let him do whatever he wanted
exactly,
at that moment, Birdman included, I think. But it did sort of set a strange tone for how he would end the first decade of this millennium and move into the next one.
And also, you have to remember that as Wayne is getting a little fuzzier at the edges, Drake is arriving.
Mm-hmm.
Nicki is arriving. And Nicki is arriving as a star. Drake is arriving as the primary engine of popular music.
Right.
And so it's interesting. Like I was thinking when I was writing about Carter Five, I was thinking about the long tail of Wayne. And obviously you can draw direct lines from Wayne to Future to Thug to Gunna. You know, like you can draw that line, but that is not the central narrative of hip hop, at least in the broader sense of the last 10 years. Drake picks that up.
And you're right.
It all goes through Drake. And so Wayne, even though he sort of anoints Drake and basically like he validates Drake.
Of course.
Drake doesn't get in the door without Wayne. But Drake also
was a Wayne versus Drake tour.
Yeah,
that right? was later. I mean, who does that?
Later. Was later.
I mean, even to do it.
Mm-hmm. So Drake doesn't get in the door, but also no idea that Drake ended up popularizing was inherited from Wayne.
Right. And I think there was a brief period where he was trying to, you know, he was moving from his like backpack rapper to his Young Money rapper phase. And he was doing a little bit of Lil Wayne cosplay, but it didn't last.
And it
wasn't his style.
It's not what he's good at.
Right. But I remember the first song I ever heard them on together was Ransom, which mm-hmm. I don't think ever came out. It's the one where Wayne recites the entire alphabet mm-hmm. at one point, just straight through.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, in those sort of rappity rap Drake songs when he wasn't singing, he was doing a little bit of Lil Wayne imitation. And you hear it also on Miss Me, which is right before Wayne goes to jail, and their collaboration from Thank Me Later.
Okay, let's listen to Ransom, the little heralded and little heard Ransom.
I'm gone in. Casey, I got this. This is my promise. I'ma bring that barrel to them. I'ma designers. And what I make up with up your skin, I pick the butt up and buck buck then buck buck again. I would buck your friend then suck up her twin. I put the buck up to him then buck buck and buck buck and buck again. Suck nut and duck your unloving kin. Now don't rub it in like Lubiderm on a new tattoo. I had to kick my princess up out my castle. Dad who never had that dude, always had a black too. Even when I was at school, cause bullies aren't bulletproof. Red scarf hoodie too, probably ain't as good as you. Stupid, the only thing in the hood is you. I do everything good as you know. I do everything better. I get paid for every letter, A, B, C, etc. Fetch a bone like a dog. I am gone for your neck in a sec, in a sec. Bring it back like work in the trunk. And my exit coming up, yeah, I am headed to the buck like buck again. Might fly to L.A. and just Corinne. Nah, fuck Corinne, let's get bucks again.
You know, also another part of Wayne is Wayne's lyrics were very dirty.
Yes.
You know, they were very sexualized, over-sexualized. He never tried to change it. It was some next levels, you know, of what he was saying, the amount of. We worked on a story one time about it, and then we were just like, this is just too dirty to keep going forward with, you know what I mean?
The fact that Lollipop got as big as it did, given how, as you say, filthy it is.
Yeah.
And he never gave that up. And I think in the sort of lost
while
way,
having kids along the way, close, you know, in age and stuff. So here this guy is transitioning into not just a father of one child, but he has more children. Like, that's a big thing with rappers is that when you're a young rapper like that and then you become an adult male rapper, I mean, it sounds stupid, but an adult in that, your priorities, everything changes, I think, about who you guys could say it more, you know, identify with as a person. So here we're watching somebody grow too, you know, and what's important to them change based on how family's established more and different things. And I think that's part of the life sometimes we skip over with people.
And also, I think Wayne's an interesting case because, so if you think about hip hop, not as a set of musicians, but if you think of it as a set of celebrities and characters, right? Mm-hmm. Wayne truly was an outlier to all the sort of master narratives of hip hop. He was not sort of an ostentatious person. Like he's not, you know, if you're moving into the early 2010s, you have the rise of A$AP Rocky and high fashion rap. Wayne has nothing to do with that.
Oh, no, he's nothing. That's white t-shirts.
He is truck fit.
Like, so and before that, you know, t-shirts and jeans.
Right. Yeah. And he is completely operating in his own lane. And in a lane that I think is, I would almost verge on saying, unambitious in those regards, when everyone around him is so obviously ambitious. Drake is obviously ambitious as a crossover success and a former actor. The Rocky generation are obviously ambitious in terms of how they want to present as personalities and as characters. Wayne was an alien. That's what he called himself. He called himself a Martian. He only answered to himself.
Yeah.
There's even the thing on Carter Five where Katie Kirk says something like that in the Wayne interview, and it's accurate. And I think that hurt Wayne when it came to influence, because I think other people who came up around the same time and maybe were less naturally gifted had other things that were a little bit easier to cling onto or copy or access. Whereas Wayne, if you couldn't rap as well as Wayne or be as intriguing melodically as Wayne
and
was.
And if you didn't love the English language as much as he did.
You had nothing to borrow from him except his weirdness.
Right. And he was very rarely a storytelling rapper.
Yeah.
You know, that you get pieces of it on Carter Five.
Right. You do get storytelling on Carter
but
Five.
But I think, you know, I think as he sort of goes into the wilderness commercially and artistically a little bit, like, as you say, like, it's maybe the most consistent Wayne topic in rap. He's a sex rapper, you know, and he got really deep into that on, I think, like, you know, Dedications 4 on 5 and Sorry for the Wait mixtapes, you know, the sort of lost Lil Wayne era. He just went deeper into, as you say, like being dirty. And as somebody who was always about sort of one-liners and quotables, that
assonance
that becomes alienating, I think, to some listeners, because he's working out it, like, you still, the flows are there, the verbal dexterity
sort
is
of.
There sometimes, but you know,
but the subject, it's just creepy.
Yeah,
it's just creepy.
Sometimes it's just it became harder to grasp onto and less funny.
Yeah.
So just to sort of tie all the threads together about marginally creepy sex raps and also Drake and Nicki Minaj taking the mantle and running with it, let's listen to a little bit of Truffle Butter, which all employees of the New York Times know what it is.
Thinking out loud, I could be broke and keep $1 million smile. LOL to the bank, checking my account. Bank teller flirting after checking my account. Pretty ladies like, yeah, trouble butter on your porch. Cuddle buddies on the low, you ain't gotta tell your friend that I eat it in the morning. Cause she gon' say I know, can I hit it in the bathroom? Put your hands on the toilet. I put one leg on the tub, girl, this my new dance move. I just don't know what to call it. But put you dancing with the stars, I ain't nothing like your last dude. What's his name? Not important. I bought some. She became a vacuum. Put it on my dick like carpet. The white or white chocolate. I'm so heartless, thoughtless, lawless, and flawless, smallest, regardless, largest, and charging, born in New Orleans, get killed for Jordan, skateboard, I'm gnarly, Drake, Tunch, and Barbie, you know.
Joe, before we jump into the Carter Five, I know you are an advocate for some late period Wayne. Do you want to talk about the dark years, the lean years?
Look,
not the lean years.
Not the lean years.
The other lane.
I'm not gonna say that anyone needs to spend time, you know, with these mixtapes or with I'm Not a Human Being too. I'm just saying that when Wayne would jump on a song, there were moments when he could still blow you away.
Yep.
I think, you know, as he's sort of beginning his stay in label purgatory, you get the Collar Grove mixtape with 2 Chainz.
So good.
Which has a lot of strong stuff
really,
on it.
Really, really good. My favorite 2010s Wayne.
Yeah, I think some of the best. I mean,
he clearly likes 2 Chainz.
I mean, okay. So
you can
this
tell
is,
who are friends, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the key.
We saw at the wedding.
Right. Yeah. The key to Lil Wayne.
Great photo.
I think some of the best Lil Wayne interviews ever are either about or featuring 2 Chainz. You know what I mean? Like the Rob Markman, Collar Grove mixtape interview,
yeah.
I think for Genius, where they're interviewed together,
yeah.
is maybe the happiest you'll ever see Wayne on camera.
And on sports.
Yes.
And do you know what sports?
And
you know?
When his appearances on ESPN.
Yeah.
Rich AF,
yes.
We'll call it, from that album.
Great
stands
song.
Out to me as, you know, a strong moment. I think, you know, more recently, his appearance I'm On One, the DJ Khaled song,
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
you know, deceptively smart and interesting and funny. And then I think the real standout from this decade is Wayne on the Solange album on Mad. We mentioned it a while back. He alludes to his suicide, but it's the first time to me that Wayne felt really grown up
mm-hmm.
since maybe Georgia Bush, you know, which was obviously his Katrina response song. That was something that meant a lot to him. But on Mad, and, you know, I don't remember the exact story, and maybe it is apocryphal, but I think Solange, you know, the word is that Solange told him, stay on topic, basically.
Right.
Like, listen to this song, write something that's going to stick with people. And I think it worked. And you sort of get a flash of what Twilight career Lil Wayne could be, mid-30s Lil Wayne. I think we should listen to it, and then maybe that'll lead us into talking about the Carter Five. Mm-hmm.
Stand the crowds, but it's hard when you only got fans around and no fam around, and if they all then they hands is out and they pointing fingers when I wear the burden on my back like a cap and gown, then I walk up in the bank pants sack it down and I laugh at frowns. What they mad about? Cause it comes to with this mass account that didn't wear a cap and gown. Are you mad cause the judge ain't give me more time, and when I tipped the suicide I didn't die? I remember how mad I was on that day, man. You gotta let it go before I get up in the way. Let it go, let it go.
Ran into this girl, she said, why you always stay?
So one of the things that I maybe struggled with on the Carter Five was, here's this really robust opportunity, right? You've been tethered by contractual issues for 4 or 5 years. You've been recording songs, and you have, according to the Rolling Stone reporting, maybe 200 songs in the can. You end up picking 23, which is just like an absurd number to pick. So that's number one.
One featuring Mac May.
Right.
And Ashanti.
Yeah. But so you pick too many, and at least a quarter to a third of them are these sort of like generic, borderline creepy love and sex song. Like they're just not what he's naturally best at. And like, they stand in such stark contrast to a track like Mona Lisa, which is his Kendrick Lamar duet, which they both rap for like 2.5 minutes each. Right. And they're these like deeply internal rhyme scheme, but still maintaining the broader narrative power.
Storytelling.
Yeah. It's even for Wayne, it's extraordinarily high level for Wayne. It's a pretty high level for Kendrick.
Too many Kendrick voices.
Well, you know, this is one of Kendrick's, his charms, I guess, is how
his
think
his
of it.
Crying through tears voice is a bridge too far.
Let's hear part of this Mona Lisa verse. It's like 3 minutes long. Let's listen to a chunk of this Mona Lisa verse from Lil Wayne. And also,
no spoilers. You can get the rest of the story elsewhere.
That's true. Search the internet. It's there.
I see niggas in this stuntin', popping bottles, getting drunk with these bitches, and when they leave, they get followed. Fall asleep with that. And really don't know much about her. Then she let us in, we take all of your sh-. And when you wake up, she help you try to find it. I love her. I be with bitches, that be with bitches, that be with bitches with riches. I tell her, get him, she say, I got you.
Before you get to the album, I mean,
yeah.
Talk about the mysticism, the everything of the Carter Five and it was ever going to come out.
Yes, okay.
You know, I mean, I think that was a huge factor is you compare that to probably Detox, right?
Yeah.
In the sense of, mm-hmm. will this album ever come out? And I think one of the craziest for me was you had Birdman clearly looking for new artists coming in this relationship with Young Thug and the Barter 5 mixtape, mm-hmm. and somebody who says they're a fan of Wayne's, yeah. and doing whatever they can to try to force them to put the tape out, mm-hmm. to create the bar. Everything that Wayne went through in between the Carter 4 and the Carter 5 actually coming out in itself to me is its own kind of bizarre story.
Yeah.
You know, of did we never knew we were going to get it? And personally to me, I checked out of if we really were, because you know how many times you've had the conversation as a rap journalist of being like, Sozy, I'm coming out.
Right.
Are we going to do the da 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 and everything? And I think it got to the point where, you know, will it come and will it matter?
Did you have any sense from your conversations during the 4 or 5 year period, conversations with whether it's various Cash Money folks or just, you know, people in the industry?
I've always heard, like, it was coming.
You always heard it was coming. Did you have a sense of what Wayne's state of mind was during that time stretch?
Nah, I wouldn't say. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I think with Wayne, a lot of times your relationships are with the people around him. And I've never been directly close with him like right. that to know where things were at, you know. And you move on. You know, I mean, as a hip hop journalist, you're staying on the pulse of what's going on.
Right.
And the Carter Five like Detox just becomes these conversations of like, are they ever going to happen? And then how good are they going to be when they do happen?
Right. And Wayne was not popping.
Like, Wayne was not popping. The kids moved on. They were looking for other projects. The lure and the everything of the when is Carter going to Five going to come out got tired.
Yes.
I think it was always a little bit overblown. Right. Like Wayne's strongest moments were very rarely on big albums.
You're right, they were, but you're looking at the Carter 3, then the disappointment of the Carter 4. You were hoping he was getting back on track for the Carter 5 to round out whatever the
because the Carter series still had
meant something, right? We skipped right over the Carter 4, which we I skipped think is the,
which
fine. Is,
right, yeah. Which, and that's the problem, right. is that you're skipping. There were some cool things on there, but you skip over the Carter 4, and after you're coming over the Carter 3, you're like, I'm invested in Wayne. Mm-hmm. I believe that he can give me what he gave on the Carter 3 or us as a rap fan. And I think that's what everyone waited for the Carter 5 was the hype of. Can you get back to Carter 3?
Yes.
But I guess that I feel like that's a bit of a pipe dream because there was no shortage of Lil Wayne music at through this time, right? I'm looking at the release dates. Carter 4 came out in the summer of 2011, right? After that, you get I'm Not a Human Being 2. You get the Free Weezy album. You know, again, we don't have to speak on these, but you get Dedication 4, Dedication 5, Sorry for the Wait 2, No Ceilings 2, Dedication 6. You know, there was any hope maybe that I think any hope that Wayne would be different on the Carter 5 than he was on all those projects I just named. I don't know.
I do think that Wayne is maybe the last of a generation that puts some kind of stake in the album form as opposed to the mixtape form. And even though I understand that he maybe was not totally in control during like the peak mid 2000s period, I think Wayne's idols are album-oriented rappers.
Right.
And I'm not saying, like, a lot of these projects that you're talking about, I remember, like, the sort of press push around these records is like, Wayne, you know, he's not just sitting by idly while the Carter 5 is, There was always this sense that the Carter Five would be some kind of
event,
grand scale project, and these things were merely placeholders.
But also, you look at it now, and everything's a project. Is it an EP? Is it an album? Is it a mixtape? Like, what the hell is it? It's a project. Back then, and when the Carter Five was supposed to come out on track or whatever, you're still looking at albums being more important than anything else.
Yes.
You're still looking at albums, mixtapes not getting the same acknowledgement. They could be better, but they're still off on the side. They're still kind of the bastard, right? So the main thing is the album. So you're looking off of classic album. In hip-hop, it's always, what are those classic albums?
He cared. He still cared.
So you were hoping that, would there was a stumble on four, could he make it back on five? And you were riding with that until it was clear that who knows if five would ever come out or not. And then it was the lore of it was coming, and then it just kind of stopped altogether.
I guess to me, you know, I spoke with Wayne briefly when the book came out a couple years ago at this point, and my expectations were sort of shifted when I asked him. I said, is the Carter Five a living, breathing thing that's changing? And when it comes out, it will be a reflection of that moment? Or is it done and sort of in a vault somewhere and just waiting for Birdman or whoever to let it go? And his answer was that it was done. Now, I don't think ultimately that was true, as we see from, you know, some of the guest appearances on this version. But I do think they should have put out this album with the songs dated. I think every song, like...
You mean with dates on the song?
Yes. Every song, I wish we could know when every song was recorded, when it was updated.
You certainly can, because there's definitely a DJ Mustard song on here that sounds like 2014 or
which I think is pretty good, actually.
That's one of my favorites. Let's actually listen to that DJ Mustard song, and it's called Open Safe.
Tattoos in my face. Grill shining in your face, blowing smoke in your face, smiling in my face, yeah, smiling in my face. She out of line, she out of place. Everybody know my face, all eyes on me. Get the mace, bad bitch with the face glitter. Snoop Dogg, murder was the case. Yeah, my homie got an open case. We in this looking like an open safe, looking like an open safe. We in this looking like an open safe. Yeah, if it's beef, we over eight. Bop, 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 bop. There's no debate. Yeah, that go to base. You niggas starve, we like fool, go to waste. Choke your punk, south neck brace. I do the same, I learn no sex tapes. With a new money, call it cake, fresh bake. Hungry bullets eating off your chest plate. I hope this bitch don't think that I'm a half faith. And I'm green when the dick was halfway. And him.
When you're coming out with an album that's controversial like this and you're waiting for it and blah, blah, blah and everything, and there's all these legal problems before and so, I never know how much an album is thrown out versus an album is really a project that, A&R'd and is a passion project versus an, hey, let's get out of the deal, let's get over this hump, I don't know at the end of the day what the motivation of why putting Carter Five out now was.
Or putting, I mean, you could say the same thing of like Drake projects or whatever, everybody is like fighting the ghost or the dark cloud of their contractual obligation.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think, you know, our overall tone on the Carter Five has been of loving disappointment, maybe.
Yeah.
I do wonder what you guys think are the high moments. Is Uproar working for you? That seems to be, you know, pleasing some people on the internet. I thought, you know, Dedicate. I thought Dedicate was a nice moment with the 2 Chainz sample.
I turn a goddamn into a God's plan.
I mean, you know, what struck me about this album is that there were still moments on every song where you saw flashes of Wayne brilliance. And
without
I didn't
doubt,
feel
right.
like
yeah.
that on these mixtapes that I just named. You know, I think there are, even the songs I don't like, there will be certain runs that he goes on that are more inspiring than anything he's done, you know, in a decade. And I think, you know, even like, he says, my Goonie Goon's the gooniest.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just stuff like that is like, it was a little bit heartening and exhilarating as someone who's put faith in Lil Wayne over the years to hear that he's still capable of pulling those out. And I wonder if you guys got any of those, any electricity at any moments through this, or was it just flat?
No, I definitely think there was electricity. I think the album was too long. You know, I think there was definitely cuts on there that were important and interesting in the collaborations he chose to do. I think to what you just said before about putting dates on it would have been interesting, because I wonder when you hear certain verses or certain things, you're not exactly sure when they are from. And that would give you an idea of a little bit what Wayne is capable of now. And I think we miss out on that. I mean, is it a compilation of over the years?
Right.
Or is it a state of who little Wayne is now? And I think those are very two different things. You can do whatever with you want.
Right. It's like, you know, sometimes you'll be at a museum or in a gallery and like they have dates on the artworks. But if it's a big painting, it's been done over many years. So it'll say like from 1993 to 1997. That's sort of like this album is from 2014 to 2018. I should say one of my favorite Lil Wayne sensations, and this is very much a mid-2000s Lil Wayne sensation, was the idea that he would pick a sound, often a vowel sound, an E or an I or an A or whatever, and he was almost like rubber banding off of it in like 20 different directions, and he'd return. And he'd stretch it out one way and then come back to it and stretch it out another.
Instead of rhyming,
Right. It was a different approach to traditional rhyme structure. There were a few songs on this album where I was like, oh, that sensation that I used to get in like 06 or 08, he's bringing some of that back.
Yeah.
And that I found, even if I didn't love the words or the lyrics or the structure, that feeling, that textural feeling of him harping over and over again on the same syllable, that I thought was great.
You know what a crazy one is on Dedication 6, which I feel like didn't really get dissected because Wayne is rapping on other people's beats and those can't be uploaded to streaming services.
Sure.
So I feel like that one sort of fell by the wayside. But there's a verse in the song Big Bad Wolf where he starts with Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Bucks player, the Greek freak.
Yeah.
And then he uses, you know, there's so many syllables in that last name, and he uses those sounds for like 2 minutes maybe straight of just playing off of one word that might seem impossible to rhyme with. But to Lil Wayne, it's just every extra letter, every extra syllable is another opportunity for him to Laffy Taffy it in a different direction. Right.
One song we haven't talked about on Carter 5 and sort of the obvious elephant in the room, and that's Don't Cry.
Yeah.
So Don't Cry is, there's vocals from XXXTentacion, and if I'm remembering the reporting correctly, those are vocals that were from a session that was done with one of the producers of the song, and it was sort of after X passed, it was kind of chopped up and presented to Wayne as an option for him to rhyme on, and I wonder if you guys could talk a little bit about the art of that song. I think that song is fine. And also the politics of the song. Also the fact that he calls X triple extension.
It drives me crazy that people don't know how to say his name.
I can't tell if he knows and is not. I can't tell if he's being deliberate or not.
I'm pretty sure he didn't. I don't know. I feel like he didn't know. I don't know. I could be wrong.
When you just
because I hear so many people call him extension.
Right.
And it drives me crazy, but so many people do that I'm like, well, it's not like, you know.
That's fair. So what do you, V, what do you think of the
I always
the,
think
the
it's weird when I don't have any politics with it. You want to, I mean, at this point, you know, the X thing is what it is. Can't punish him, you know, for everything at this point. But I think that it's always weird to me when you didn't meet somebody and you collaborate with them and you don't meet later and there's no chance you're going to do it live or anything like that. And I think there's a trendiness in the X stuff right now in his death, even with Kanye. That you're seeing that. And that's a bit of a turnoff to me as
feels
a fan.
Tiny bit craven.
But yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think you needed it at all. I don't really understand that. I think probably X would have enjoyed being able to collaborate with you in life rather than in death would be my guess. So there's something weird about
feels
that
off
to me, especially knowing the way X worked a little bit and his interest in music and collaborating and everything like that. I feel like he would have liked to have been embraced to been able to been on know he was going to be on the Carter Five.
Right.
Let's actually listen to a little bit of Wayne on Don't Cry, especially in the second verse where he's talking about his mother.
Grateful. Fame is not a given. Be humble and consider self-driven. Drive carefully, stay in your own lane. See buckling. Sometimes when there is no music, we toot our own horns. Bum-bum-bum-bum. That woman carried the future and Tunchi was born like da-da-da-da-da-da. Don't call it a comeback. It was dark, now the sun back. Hit me hard, but I punched back. The wheels fell off, I rode the hubcap. Is it suicide or is do or die? It's newer days and it's bluer skies. I told myself it's just you and I. Then the breeze came and it blew my mind. Lord knows who I'm there for. I
give my last breath to effort. Mama tell me to be careful. Voice in my head give me an earful. But I got mind control over mind control. I lost control but knew I'd find control. I let God control what I cannot control. Can't control the tears, let them drop and roll.
Thematically, I'll give him some credit. I think, you know, the album starts with Lil Wayne's mother, you know, with talking about all that he's been through. By the end of her little monologue, she's crying, you know, she's bawling.
Yeah.
The ex, obviously, it's simple. The hook is don't cry.
It's called don't cry.
It comes immediately.
I hear you. Artistically, you can match it up. Yeah.
Right. And then, which is a rare thing, I think, with Wayne, thematically, the song and as much of this album is about his mother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And John, you make this point in your review. I think femininity is really his obsession on this album. Mm-hmm. It's all about his mother, his daughter, and women who have wronged him.
And his daughter becoming a woman and having a different relationship with her, I would think.
And it's way more about his struggles with the opposite sex than it is about his struggles with Birdman, which I think people
did. Extends off of years of Dirty Lyrics.
Sure.
I mean, right? There's a connection that you would think there. But also I think the absence of Drake is, you know, no matter what the excuses are, the absence of Drake to me are pretty clear.
Yeah, you only get him in a sample, vocal sample.
Right, like a very short one.
Yeah. But I do think, you know,
to not have that Drake look like the Kendrick look, to me, I feel like there's something weird in that. Not saying that they have beef, but what was it, studio conflicts or something prevented it?
Same with the
I don't know.
Album.
It's been how many years?
Right.
Yeah.
There's 200 songs, there's no Drake, you know.
It is a strange choice. Although I do.
Like, I would want to hear all three of them on the Carter Five.
I would,
current
I'm
day
surprised.
Song with all three of them.
Yeah, they should have a 2018 song, although I do.
Family Feud? It's pretty good. The Family Feud freestyle that they did is surprisingly good, but it was.
But on an album.
But it was too late for Dedication 6.
And also, I kind of wonder, and again, we don't know about Wayne's state of mind because he hasn't done a lot of press around this album, but I wonder to what degree Wayne not feels outshined by Drake and Nicki, but the Carter series is his series. It's his stuff. And I wonder if maybe he felt. Maybe Drake shouldn't be on this. Maybe it's wrong.
This predates Drake.
Yeah.
Let me finish it on my own.
Yeah,
my
I don't know.
My feeling with Wayne was, you know, I mean, I was always impressed by the Wayne versus Drake because you gave the opportunity for Drake to kill you as your own artist or beat you as your own artist.
Totally agree.
In a venue every night. And there was something fascinating with Wayne be able to embrace Drake even if he thought he did it better than John Day with him, which was almost Wayne coming back and saying, I don't have to be the best rapper alive anymore.
Right. Or at least acknowledging that there are parallel tracks Drake could be the best this and I can be the best this.
And I'm still the best because I'm the boss, you know, or whatever thing there. So I don't know if, to me, I never got a selfishness from Wayne, that he was a selfish character,
that's fair.
He was manipulated and so on. So to me, it's like the guy woke up and whatever he did that day.
Yep.
And that was with the music as well.
Right.
So I feel like I don't know if there would be as methodical as, no, this is Mike Carter and he can't be on it. I just wonder how much they deal with each other anymore and what was worth it or what was it or what the business is and clearing it. Everything having to do with anything.
Very
there.
Different points. In
you know,
they're
at such a very different points in their career. I would wonder what that dynamic would be. But at the end of the day, when you look at in the big picture, you have everything with Wayne, Cash Money, Wayne, the early Hot Boys, Wayne, big. You think they're going to fall off and somehow Birdman and Wayne figure out Nicki and Drake. And that extends the legacy of Cash Money for so many more years. So there's a pride thing in there that you'd want to think to me that in this series of Carter Five,
maybe you're right.
Bring it all together and bring
and
it
Nicki
back
And Nicki is
in.
On the record on like a genuinely bad song, like a genuinely terrible song.
A little bit more questionable.
To me, that's where as soon as Nicki's voice comes in, that's where the album sort of starts to fire. I think it starts strong. Then you
it
get
definitely
that,
starts
you know,
start as strong.
Then you get that suite of R&B in the middle as soon as Nicki's vocals.
I mean,
come
even
in.
The Nivea collaboration is you know interesting for the relationship.
Yeah,
you
of
know?
Course.
And I think it picks back up a little bit at the end. Like there, you know, there is stuff on here, but you know, it's, it just it
and
doesn't
the song
all stick
speaking
together.
On it's the thick. Shooting and all of that shows where he and with the mother. It shows how personable he wanted it to be.
Yep.
I just don't know if the 23 songs one were needed. And were as personal as the idea was.
The idea, I agree, as a thematic through line is more effective than the execution. There is, I mean, Drake is not on this record, but we should probably go out with the one song that I think could kind of like rear end its way into being a radio record, and that's the Travis Scott record.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it, you know, it sounds like a Travis Scott
record.
It's
a lot of Travis Scott, but Wayne really, at the end, Wayne really goes in.
No, and they're good together.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's one of those moments where I was like, okay, maybe here's your break. Your, you know, this is where the field opens up and you get to run.
At least a good music video.
We'll see.
Maybe.
Let's close out. This is Let It Fly.
Let it fly.
Let it fly like the birds in the sky. Hotter than the weather in July. I done did so much I can decide.
That's our show, Goons and Goblins. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my guests, Vanessa Satin.
Thank you for having me.
Check out Vanessa and Double XL every month. Whenever
every day,
whenever magazines are released, whenever the internet gets updated. Thank you to Joe Coscarelli. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your favorite off-cycle Wayne bars or songs at podcastnytimes.com. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio content: Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, etc., etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. Back next week.
I kept the town, not throwing in. I'm riding around in my hands. I got a driver for the bit to drive me round. When I've been, I keep some just to lick to help me out. When I've been, she wanna hit that again. Oh. That's the phone call with my blood ray. It's the car to five, let the thug see.